This is Digital Story Podcast number 994, April 8th, 2025. Today's theme is, I would not have survived this wedding without Phil Flash. I'm Derek Story. Dateline, Sunday, 2 p.m. Outdoor ceremony on a cloudless day. To say that it was bright outside would be an understatement. The sun was beaming in at an angle. Those sitting in the audience could don hats and sunglasses. Those at the altar could not. This is what separates iPhone snapshooters from event photographers. And in this week's TDS Photography Podcast, I'll explain how I pulled it off. I hope you enjoy the show. Before I get to Sunday's wedding, I want to share an anecdote from my working past. For years, wedding photography was my primary source of business revenue. Every season, I would bring on a second shooter to make sure I covered all the bases. One year, I brought on a very capable photographer, one who has gone on to a successful career. But we ran into a problem. She did not like using Phil Flash for events. She was a natural light only photographer. I was able to persuade her to use flash for the gigs that she worked with me, but she didn't like it. I compromised by agreeing that she only had to use the fill light in situations that would otherwise be compromised by harsh natural light. I thought her work with flash was quite good, but after one season we parted so she could pursue other opportunities. I wish she would have let me work with her more on Phil Flash photography, because in my view, when done properly, it has a very natural look. Since that time, I've read others who are adamant about not using Phil Flash. I smile and think of my friend who worked one season with me, and I say to myself, if they would only let me show them how. Fast forward to Sunday's wedding, I wanted to use the Nikon ZF. This would be the first time that I've chosen this camera for a major event. It's been such a joy to work with. I wanted to see what we could do together in a wedding situation. And I had been thinking about this for a while. I've grown to really like the Nikon ZF. I think it's a terrific camera. And I thought, you know what? It's time for it and I to shoot a wedding together. Let's do it for this wedding, because it's a smaller wedding. And I was thinking I could probably ease into it with this camera and everything should go okay. Now, since I hadn't used it for events, I didn't have a serious flash for it. So I decided to purchase the newer Z1N TTL round head flash for Nikon with a magnetic dome diffuser included. I like this flash because, first of all, it was affordable, $169. Powerful, 76 watts, and had a big battery, a 2600 rechargeable lithium, MAH rechargeable lithium. And as it turned out, I made a very good call. That flash on the Nikon ZF served me very well in every situation during the wedding. Now, the first big test was the outdoor ceremony in bright sunlight, which I alluded to at the top of the show. The contrast was crazy, I'm telling you. And we all know that situation, right? Everyone is out in the open, not a cloud in the sky. Sun is coming in at an angle, and it was coming in from the side on the ceremony. You know, I'm looking at this, I'm going, whoa, that is not flattering light. The nice thing about the ZF is that it will flash sync up to 1/200th of a second. So that's fairly decent. I set it in program mode with the flash on ITTL and made a couple of test shots. And they were pretty good. After reviewing them, I thought, okay, all right, we're all right here. So I dialed back flash exposure compensation to -1.3. Now, this is the key to using Phil Flash for people. Is that you never use it at full strength. Almost always, I can't think of a time really when I haven't, negative 1.3, and later on, as you'll hear, to negative 1.6. But dialing it back provides a more natural appearance. And photographers, I think, could still tell that there's a fill light because they're going, I'm looking at the way the shadows are in the background, and I'm looking the way that there aren't shadows on the faces, and I'm thinking, you know, there's a fill light here somewhere. I mean, so photographers could tell, but the average person is not going to be thinking about it. They're just going to be thinking how nice the people look in these photographs. The fill light was powerful enough to even out the contrast, even in this really tough situation. But the people were still balanced with the background. So it really worked out nicely. The shots look great. And the other thing that I liked about this newer flash, it has a lot of power. And I knew I needed that. You just need something that will work outdoors. You know, it's funny, when I'm doing events, I actually use the flash more outside on a bright day than I do indoors. Indoors is a whole different ball game, and we'll get to that in a minute. But outdoors, taking pictures of people is where I really need the fill light. And in order to compete with that ambient light outside, the flash has to be fairly powerful. So next came the group shots. And the nice thing about group shots is I have more control over where we do them. The ceremony is going to be where the ceremony is, but group shots are, generally speaking, where the photographer says they're going to be. So I found a great spot in a stand of redwoods with some mild backlighting. The backlighting wasn't too strong, but it was nice backlighting. You know, kind of brightened up the background so you didn't have, you know, this dark curtain behind. But having the filtered light in the redwoods was really terrific. But because it was a little darker in there, I had to dial back the flash exposure compensation even more to negative 1.6. Now, what I did, and this was something, one of the reasons why I wanted to shoot with the Nikon ZF, because it has a lot of cool little things in there. And one of the cool little things is called skin softening. Now, I had played around with it, just playing around, but I hadn't used it on an assignment yet. I'm going to use it on this assignment. So before everything got started, I did some test shots with it, and it has three levels, and it has, you know, low, medium, and high. I don't know if I'll ever use the high skin softening because it starts to look a little airbrushed, and the medium was pretty good, but I wanted to be as natural as possible. So I ended up going with the low, which was a good call. So having the skin softening set to low and then using a mild fill flash, negative 1.6 on the flash exposure compensation in this very evenly lit situation environment in the stand of redwoods was a beautiful combination. And the background had, you know, it had some light going on, which was great, you know, so definitely there was some brightness to the scene, but it wasn't distracting. And then the other thing that really came into play here that I like about the newer, it has a round head, but it also has a dome flash diffuser. Now, I tested it on location, shooting with and without the flash diffuser, because obviously if you use the diffuser, you're giving up a little bit of light. But the difference in the shots was very noticeable. The light was definitely more harsh without the diffuser, and definitely more pleasing, in fact, quite pleasing with the diffuser. So having the diffuser combined with the mild skin softening, combined with just the right amount of fill light, gave this very natural sort of lighting situation, but yet everyone's faces were illuminated. It smoothed out wrinkles. Honestly, everyone looked great. It looked great. So the group shots went really well. The nice thing is when you're in an environment like that, once you get your settings, then you just roll with the shots until you're done. Check that one off. Finally, we had the reception. We were inside a reception hall, but it was a beautiful reception hall. Where we were staying, this location on the Russian River in the Redwoods has been around forever, and it's a community there. are inside redwoods, you know, redwood forests, essentially. And the reception hall is, you know, wood floors, open beams, wood-lined walls, but nice wood, you know what I mean? Really good-looking stuff. Really pretty, and then lots of windows, so you have lots of natural light coming in. Now, not enough natural light to really have pleasing exposures on a bride and groom's face, but enough natural light that you had something to work with so you could keep the background open. And that's what I was really after, because the facility was so beautiful, I wanted to retain that in the shots. I wanted to see, you know, that beautiful hall in the pictures, like when they were dancing or cutting the cake or whatever they happened to be doing. In order to do that, what I did was I went to manual exposure mode. I dropped the shutter speed to a 30th of a second. Now, I have been doing that since the film days for indoor flash photography. I dropped the shutter speed to 1/30th of a second. And yes, when there's movement, 1/30th isn't that fast. But remember, you've got a fill light coming in from the flash. And so the fill light gives you a little extra operating room. And then there's kind of a knack to waiting for that moment. Even when they're dancing, you know, they'll spin around, but there's like a moment where they're not really moving, if you know what I mean. You could call it peak of action. And so when you get the hang for capturing those peak of action, I can get away with a 30th of a second with a fill light. And, you know, they look good and you don't get any blurring. So a 30th of a second, f5.6, I upped the ISO to 800. And, you know, on that camera, on the ZF, 800 is nothing. it doesn't even, you know, wince at 800. So up to 800. And then the flash was set to -1 inside the reception hall. So I backed it off to -1. And then I just, you know, shot. And again, when I look at the shots, by the way, looking at the shots on the MacBook Air M4, they just look beautiful. They just really look great. They're nice and open and airy. And, you know, you see the featured couple in most of the shots. But if, you know, there are others standing around them, friends and family, while they do something like cutting the cake or whatever, they look nice. And manual exposure with flash indoors, if you get all your settings right, is just absolutely wonderful. It just gives you a feeling of being there that I very much like, yet people's faces are nicely exposed. They don't have shadows and things like that. Their eyes are lit, so you can see their eyes. It's a terrific combination. Now, I had purchased a second lithium battery for the flash, and this is the first flash that I've had that had just a nice chunky little mini brick of a lithium battery that just pops out and pops in. So I had a second battery. So you can change batteries in this flash, like boom. And I did that in the reception hall. I changed out the flash battery. I usually like to change it out when I'm getting down to about a quarter power, because I don't want to take a chance on an event happening and then me running out of juice. So I changed out the flash battery. I changed the battery in the Nikon too, and it was down probably about a third left. But again, not taking any chances. That was the only battery changes I had to do all day into the late afternoon. So that worked out really, really well. I thought the flash, or as much as I was using it outside, which you know is requiring a lot of juice, I thought that battery hung in there really well. The newer flash has a 5600K color temperature, which actually wasn't too cool, but it was especially nice when used in combination with Nikon's Auto White Balance A1. White Balance A1, and I like White Balance A1, keeps the overall atmosphere, is really a terrific find. I didn't really discover it until I'd had the camera for about a month or two. And once I've switched to it, I just pretty much leave it there unless I have, you know, something special that I want to do. The camera just seems to render a nice color regardless of the situation that I'm in. And I think in combination with the not too cool 5600K color temperature of the flash head, I had to do very little white balance adjusting in post. Now I'm only about, I'm about two thirds through the shoot because I just, you know, do a little bit at a time. I'll be done with it probably tomorrow or so. So far, I haven't had to do much white balance adjusting at all, and that's been really nice. Now, I should be able to hand over this shoot to the bride and groom before the end of the week easily, and I know they're going to love these pictures because I was showing them shots on the LCD back, you know, all during the reception and stuff, and, you know, I love doing that, especially at things like wedding receptions, because, you know, everyone's kind of gathered around the camera, especially if you've got, you know, four or five people in the shot and they're looking at it and they just get excited. It's like, oh, we're going to have good pictures. Not only are we having a good time right now, but we're going to have good pictures too. And that's one of the reasons why I share them, just so they know that, you know, it's going to be great. You're going to have wonderful pictures. You're going to see them along the way, and then they're going to look even better when I send them to you. Now, an interesting side note, Teresa, my wife, she was the officiant for this ceremony. And so she was looking over my shoulder when I was working on the pictures last night, sorting them and getting them ready and all that kind of stuff. And she said, I usually don't like pictures of myself, but boy, you made me look good today. And of course I answered, well, you looked good today. The camera just recorded what was there. But the fact that, you know, she rarely likes pictures that I take of her, and the fact that she liked these shots in the lighting conditions that we had, because a lot of the shots of her were in that bright sunlight where she was, you know, leading the wedding ceremony. If she liked them, then, you know, I'm going, all right, I'm in like Flynn here. I know she would not have said that if I insisted on shooting that ceremony with natural light only. And once again, I thought of my photographer friend from the past. And P.S., the Nikon ZF mirrorless is an awesome camera for event photography. All right, let's do some camera industry news here. This first piece is from The Verge, and I thought it was very interesting. It's titled, "We Asked Camera Companies Why Their RAW Formats Are All Different and Confusing." And universal open source format exists, but only a handful of cameras use it. And I have a link to this article in the show notes. You're going to want to take a look at it because I'm only going to touch on bits and bobs here from it. When you set up a new camera or even go to take a picture on some smartphones, you're presented with a key choice, JPEG or RAW. JPEGs are ready to post just about anywhere, while RAWs yield an unfinished file filled with extra data that allows for much richer post-processing. The option for a RAW file has been standardized across the camera industry, but despite that, the camera world has never actually settled on one standardized RAW format. Most cameras capture RAW files in proprietary formats like Canon's CR3, Nikon's NEF, Sony's ARW, and the result is a world of compatibility issues. Photo editing software needs to specifically support not just each manufacturer's file type, but also make changes for each new camera that shoots it. That creates pain for app developers and early camera adopters who want to know that their preferred software will just work. And of course, I've talked about that on this podcast a lot regarding Photos for macOS and how Apple is slow on adopting the new cameras in these proprietary RAW formats. Adobe tried to solve this problem years ago with a universal RAW format, DNG, standing for digital negative, which it open sourced for anyone to use. A handful of camera manufacturers have since adopted DNG as their RAW format, but the largest names in the space still use their own proprietary files, and there's no sign of that changing anytime soon. And then what are the advantages of proprietary RAW format versus an open source one like DNG? This is what I wanted to get to. Larger camera companies know that app developers will rush to support their latest features, letting them stick with their own RAW formats. A proprietary RAW format offers tighter control over the image pipeline direct from the manufacturer's camera, from the point of capture to the files you're editing on your computer. That's the sentiment I got from multiple camera company reps who gave me feedback when I asked them why they stuck with their proprietary format. Here are some of the answers I got when asked why they go with proprietary options. Sony Alpha cameras use proprietary ARW format to maximize performance based on device characteristics such as the image sensor and image processing engine. Here's what Panasonic said. A proprietary format enables better optimization and supports unique camera functions. Sigma. Adding proprietary data allows the camera information to be given more accurately to developing software. However, it is less versatile. Canon uses a proprietary RAW format because it allows our proprietary information to be added to RAW without being restricted by standardization, and data can be handled freely, enabling optimum processing during image development. Here's what Pentax had to say. The advantage of proprietary formats is that they can evolve on their own. The disadvantage is that they may not be supported by third-party applications. We should note here that Pentax is the lone manufacturer that gives users a choice between proprietary PEF file and DNG. The disadvantage of using DNG is that if all manufacturers use the DNG format, it will be difficult to manage the format separately for each manufacturer. Nikon, they didn't answer The Verge's questions in time for the publication, and neither did Fujifilm. Even if multiple brands of cameras use the same off-the-shelf sensor, Nikon, Pentax, Leica, and others use sensors manufactured by Sony, the image processing pipeline and fine-tuning is all proprietary. It's what gives brands their signature style, like the color science that Fujifilm is known for. That doesn't mean that it's impossible to do all of that with an open format like DNG. I have yet to hear a good reason for using proprietary RAW formats. The underlying data is the same. If a manufacturer comes up with additional data that isn't included in the DNG standard, the format is extensible enough that a camera manufacturer can throw it in there anyway. I wish it weren't like this, but ultimately it's mostly fine, at least for now. As long as the camera brands continue to work closely with companies like Adobe, we can likely trudge along just fine with the status quo. As much as I personally prefer to see all cameras offer a common format like DNG, so at very least you never have to worry about incompatibilities, it's unlikely that mainstays like Canon CR3 and Nikon NEF files will ever go away. By the way, one interesting sidebar they have in the article, and there's a lot more I didn't read, is they have all of the extensions for the different camera manufacturers, all the RAW extensions, which is kind of fun. 10 documentary shorts every photographer should watch on YouTube. This is a cool little article. It's on Digital Camera World. Reignite your love of photography by watching these documentary shorts, all free to view on YouTube. If you want to get better at something, learn from the masters. And getting insights from the world's greatest photographers has never been easier, thanks to a treasure trove of free documentary shorts on YouTube. These short films offer unprecedented access to their minds, techniques, and journeys of photographers who have redefined visual narrative across genres, from wildlife and war photography to portrait and conceptual art. Each documentary is a masterclass revealing philosophy, passion, and creative process behind extraordinary photographic work, and best of all, they're free to watch on YouTube. We've listed them in the order of running time, starting with the shortest. Okay, so this is on digitalcameraworld.com, and I have the link in the show note, and you're going to want this link because it has all of these films and their links. You know, you get a little thumbnail, and all you have to do is hit the play button, and you can watch it right here in the article. And just to give you a taste of some of these, Robert Capa's D-Day photographs. This was a Time production. You can watch that. Film Photography in a Digitized World. Eric Kessel's Reimagining Amateur Photography. Lee Miller, A Photographer's Extraordinary Journey. for everything photographic. How to photograph polar bears in one of the most extreme places on Earth. Photographing rare and elusive birds in Brazil. And I think that would apply to anywhere. Entering new worlds through photography. Zeiss 175 years of optical innovation. And the last roll of Kodachrome. So these are fun. And just something that if you bookmark this page and just when you want a little shot of creative inspiration, you can watch one of these movies. It doesn't take much time. A lot of them are between 5 minutes and 25 minutes. It could either be a coffee break or a lunch break, depending on how you roll. But I would take a look at these. This is just a terrific resource. Really well done. And finally, here's something that hopefully makes you smile. Smiling in profile pictures can make a difference, study finds. This is on Petapixel, and I have a link in the show notes. A study has shown that whether a person smiles or not in their profile pictures matters to other people and can even affect how much money they earn. The study published in April's Journal of Consumer Research looked at the profile pictures of Airbnb hosts and how their smile affects other people's perceptions of them. Amazingly, Airbnb hosts who do smile saw a 3.5% average increase in bookings. Forbes reports that's an additional $673 annual income just for wearing a smile, and that's extra annual income. But not all smiles are equal, and there's a difference between the sexes. Whether a female host smiled or not didn't matter anywhere nearly as much as smiling males who saw an 8.7% increase over their non-smiling counterparts. The researchers say that this is because the greater uncertainty surrounding interactions with male hosts. A smile puts a potential customer at ease. Then they go on and they talk about smiling on other platforms, and then they close with this. Researchers say that smiling is a surefire way to signal approachability and safety. People are more likely to trust people who smile. Nevertheless, different contexts may require different smiles. For example, those who want a leadership role, a more subtle smile might be better than a large flashing smile to show both approachability and authority. But for those dealing directly with customers, a bigger smile may come across as much more personable. Something to think about when you're helping your friends choose a profile picture, or if you're shooting a profile picture, get them to smile. It can mean extra money in their pocket. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. Let's talk about workshops again. I featured these three last week, but I just want to remind you in case you missed last week's show. We have a new online workshop, the Sony Creative Masterclass led by Rob Knight, and it's starting on May 8th, and it's an online course. So there'll be four sessions. This all new class is designed to help you make the most of your Sony camera. We will dive into features, custom functions, menus, and more. Each online class will include presentations and tutorials based on years of professional photography experience using various Sony cameras and lenses, plus plenty of time for your questions about the system. That one begins on May 8th. We have Creative Camera Techniques led by me. That starts on June 5th. In addition to a full slate of goodies I have planned for iPhone photographers, Fuji cameras, Nikons, and more, I'm adding creative techniques for the new OM system, OM3. Photographers will be able to pick and choose techniques based on the camera system they shoot with. That begins on June 5th, and that is an online workshop. And then we have the Sonoma County Autumn Adventure Workshop led by me starting on November 4th. We'll be returning to Safari West African Wildlife Preserve, visiting the world-famous Coppola Vineyard, home of amazing wines, rolling vineyards, Academy Awards, and an authentic Tucker car, and more. I have links to all of those workshops here in the show notes, or you can just go to our workshops page on thenimblephotographer.com. like to give a big thanks to our Patreon members, our Inner Circle clan. These folks support this podcast month in and month out. They have their own space on Derek Story Online where they share pictures and views, ask questions, and provide answers to those questions. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, and I hope you are, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can join right there, and the next thing you know, you'll be getting an email invite from me asking you to be a part of our space on Derek Story Online, and of course, receiving all the discounts for workshops and other things going on with the Digital Story. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. These are the folks that provide excellent inkjet printing paper in a variety of sizes and a variety of surfaces, which is so important because unlike looking at pictures on a digital screen, you can print a picture on different surfaces, different paper surfaces, and it takes on different characteristics. So you can have a warmer feel to it or a cooler feel to it, a more brighter feel to it, a more matte feel to it. So then your printing paper selection becomes part of the creative expression of this image. And that's one of the things that Red River Paper does for us as photographers. Not only do they provide this paper, but they provide all the information that you need to choose the right paper for you. If you're interested in getting your inkjet printing mojo on, all you have to do is click on the tile, the Red River Paper tile, that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can nose around a bit, get some paper, and start making some beautiful images. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.